Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome along to this week's Rugby Pod, brought to you by our usual good friends at Guinness, who have been supporting us all season with competitions, ticket giveaways, and some of the black stuff as well. So big thanks to them. Goody's here with me as usual, and Big Jim is back from Dubai. How was the holiday, mate?
I can't wait to hear this.
Well, Goody knows what we're about to say. It's like some things you can't write and you cannot script. And it could be one of them where I'm lying on the beach, drinking a coconut, overlooking a palm tree, loving life, thinking about how I can make a story up and come back and tell the boys about it next week. Well, I didn't need to make a story up. On our final day of being in Dubai, we thought we were going to take a walk down the beach. As we've opened the door of the apartment, Max, who's one of the twins, has fallen headfirst into a concrete skirting board and split his eye above his eyeball, and we had to take him to hospital. Do you think I know what the crack is in Dubai in terms of hospitals? So we're down in reception, there's blood pissing everywhere.
Why have you pushed your kid into a wall for?
Insurance, mate. When there's a blame, there's a claim. As we know, Andy Rowe, when you got knocked off your bike. But yeah, imagine me trying to migrate through. It was a Saudi-German hospital. Do you think anyone spoke English?
Oh, the Germans helped you out, did they?
Mate, the Germans. I can speak German, though.
Can you?
Well, I didn't realise until I got angry and started shouting, Ich bin scheiße schief. Das ist die eine kucke Taschen des Slaschen, die eine ploppe Schlavi des Schlavi, which if you put in on Siri, basically converts to something like, the man has dog biscuits in his pocket. So I'm multilingual and...
Langual?
Yeah.
And multilingual?
Yeah. Bilingual, sorry. Well, no, because I speak French as well.
Multilingual, but anyway, I don't know what language
is. Oh, lingual, sorry, lingual.
You're lanky, yeah. I don't know about lingual, but...
And yeah, so basically Max had to have 4 stitches. They wanted to bring the plastic surgeon in, but that was going to be £1,500, which was something like 15,000 dirhams or something. So I was like, how much just to bang a few stitches in there? 500 snakes or 700 snakes for anaesthetic. I was like, fuck the anaesthetic. I was like, it's his fault. And for 500 quid, he got 4 of the best stitches in a Saudi German hospital. So that was my last day in Dubai.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't wait to get back and come to work, if you call in this work. So
just on the hospital trip then, did you go on your own with Max, or did you the whole family go? Did you leave the missus back in the hotel with all the other kids that you don't know their names? Have you learnt their names?
Yeah, I have. I left the other two in kids' club.
At what time?
Kids, mate, I don't even know. I don't even know if kids' club was open. I dropped them at the door. And this is the thing with guys and girls who've played rugby. Blood, I ain't bothered at all. Cuts, like broken bones, any of the kids get any of them things. Mm. I ain't bothered. Not the fact that I don't like them. I'm not bothered. I'm just not bothered about them things. Whereas you look at other people when they see blood, I took them down to reception and they're all making a big kerfuffle. I just basically, my wife just saw me as the head of the family after that. So I'd moaned the whole week about I was too hot. The coconut wasn't cold enough. The final day I stepped up and she said she loves me again. And I said I will never be getting on the plane with the kids ever again. So.
And what about you, Goody? How was Easter, mate?
Well, I've got news for you guys.
How much you put on?
I ate my body weight in Easter eggs. Of course I did.
Like, do you feel like death? No. You look like death. Like, genuinely. No, I've come back. I'm tanned. I've been training when I'm there. I've been drinking coconuts. Don't know if I mentioned that.
Coke or coconuts?
Coconuts. Oh, you look like hell. Are you all right?
What do you mean? I've got a black jumper on. It's slimming, isn't it?
No. Okay. No, it's not.
Well, the news is, I've only gone and done it, haven't I, boys? Joined the gym.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you got a gastric band.
Joined the gym at Stoke Park.
Have you actually?
Yeah, did it over the weekend.
And have you been in yet or not?
Well, I took the kids swimming. That's what it's for, isn't it? No?
No. This is about you being able to take the kids swimming when they turn 5, Goody.
My next issue is I've seen all these machines in the gym. I don't know how the fuck to use them.
YouTube, mate.
I need someone to write me a plan. I need someone to say, right, 3 days a week, go to the gym. This is what you're going to do in the gym.
Are you doing a plug for a personal trainer?
I mean, people want to help me out, don't they? So anyone out there?
No, people want to save your life, mate.
Exactly, exactly.
That's what they want.
Well, you do a before and after shot in your budgies if someone comes along and...
Oh, how much? No.
Like, you could inspire so many people out there who are morbidly obese. You really
could. I'm not morbidly obese, though, Jim.
You are. if you had an x-ray done of yourself, and what's the other one that you'd have where it shows the full body one? An MRI, let's say. There you go. If you did a before and after with them, that would show that you are like an inflated suit in a bag of bones. That's what it would show.
Anyway, anyone that's a personal trainer at AndyGood10, just drop me some hints and, we can come to an arrangement.
In talking of training, me and Andy Rowe, I finally signed up. I thought I signed up before to the sprint triathlon.
We're doing it to raise awareness for the Hambo Foundation as well. So,
are you two having a bit of a challenge about who wins and who?
Oh, mate, we're going for it, mate.
I think you should make a bet here and now, you two.
I'm hoping that Jim's body breaks on the run leg.
Right, I'm going to take him down. I'll take you down then. The fact that you've shown no confidence just says to me that I can hammer you.
Okay, and if you don't beat him, Jim, what are you going to do?
Shave my hand. I don't know.
There we go.
I always say that.
Well, we've had a bit of a change of scenery this week. We're recording the pod from Wolfpack Bar in Queen's Park, which is quite appropriate after Saracens Wolfpack marched on to another Champions Cup final at the weekend. What do you guys make of that performance?
It was very Saracens-esque in terms of the champion team from a couple of years ago. They were just phenomenal. You look at it, and you're looking at Munster, and I know they got that try in the corner, which should or shouldn't it have been given from the scrum. Yeah, they were missing Carberry, which was a massive loss. Watching the game, you saw areas where, and it's ever so easy to watch it on TV and think that's where you can attack Saracens. Yeah, you can put a two-pass play on out the back and get an edge. And trust me, having been there as a fly half against teams that have phenomenal defences like that, you can't see a hole anywhere. And Munster just kept going in, sort of one-out runners trying to win that gain line battle. And Saracens kept knocking the life out of them, didn't they? You know, their power game in terms of getting over the game on it. And it's one of those things, when Munster, the amount of tackles that they made in that first half, in that heat, the amount of work the Munster boys had to put in to keep Saracens at bay at times, and then Saracens just ran away with it a bit in the second half, didn't they? Their power game was phenomenal. And it's set up for an amazing final, two best teams comfortably.
I did a column actually in the lead up to the game, and I had a feeling with everything that had gone on with Billy and everything that had gone on kind of previously with the salary cap stuff, the fact that Owen Farrell hadn't really featured apart from the Newcastle game since that England-Scotland game, that this would be a game that we'd see a proper, you know, they talk about the Saracens' performance. I couldn't believe actually how good they were.
Yeah.
They were phenomenal. And then you put into the mix as well that Mako was back. How good was he?
Considering he makes a hell of a difference.
He's been out since January. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what training he's done in the lead up to that in terms of that week, whether it was touch and go, whether he was going to play. But he was ridiculous. Farrell was brilliant. Brad Barrett obviously managed to roll himself out for the first half because I heard he was out for the season with his ankle injury. But I just think the performance that they put in, if there was any question marks over Saracens, whether they were the team of 2 years ago with a strength and depth
that you didn't play in.
but talking about strength and depth, look at the players they brought on. Wigglesworth comes on, box kicking when it mattered. And I think the same with Goody. Look at the defence that Munster had to put in, you know, to sustain that for the full game. And you bring on guys like Big Willie, Little Willie Skelton. It was always going to happen.
What are you saying about the salary cap here, or what are we talking about?
No, mate, we're talking about the academy system that works for Saracens.
And that is the thing. You look at every successful, I thought about this over the weekend, actually. You look at pretty much every successful team that's won Europe in England, that's won the Premiership. So you look at the last few successful teams, Saracens, a lot of them have come through the academy. You go back to Exeter 2 years ago, who won the Premiership, loads of players through the academy system. You know, Leicester, when they were dominant, loads of players through the academy system. Northampton, when they won it, a load of those players came through the academy system. And people talk about Saracens and the salary cap and all this stuff, but the reality of it is, all these guys, a lot of their main players have come through. Yeah, they signed Billy from Wasps, but he'd been through the sort of area in Harrow School and all that stuff. So, you know, they are paying them huge wages now, and rightfully so, but they've created these players themselves.
It's more than just playing. That's the thing you saw at the weekend, and I don't want to labour the Billy Vunipola situation, but that's what I said in the column for Rugby Passes. I think that kind of thing at Saracens, I don't know what other clubs are like, that almost unites them as a team, because they know that he needs an arm put round him. The coaches know that. Not necessarily that it's a motivation for the team, but they'll know that he's got a point to prove, and they'll know that the players will want to play well for him because they know that he's, you know, he's had a tough week, however you want to say it. I know people are going to think that's a ridiculous thing to say, having done what he did in the lead-up to that. So, yeah, from a Saracens perspective, it was great. I tell you what I was disappointed about. I think you mentioned it, or someone else mentioned it on Twitter. The crowd. Mate, were they all in hospitality with you or what, mate?
Well, there was a lot in hospitality, to be fair.
Who was there from hospitality? Wasps or Saracens? Who was there?
Anyone and everyone, really.
All the Kovskins.
I did two different lounges. But the thing was, so I tweeted about it. So I got to the bottom of finding out how many tickets were sold, et cetera, et cetera.
How many were sold? Do we know?
So I think in the end, there was about 16,000 there, of which 14,500 were Munster fans.
Is that legit or not?
Not far off. Saracens asked for 3,000 tickets to sell to their fans. and they didn't
3,000 bloody loyal fans, that's all I know, mate.
They didn't sell them all. Munster asked for 15,000, but there is mitigating circumstances. So it was Easter weekend. There were train issues affecting train journeys from London. So people might have looked at it and gone, oh, it's on TV. It's like Easter weekend, so we might be away, bank holiday with the kids, whatever, whatever. But still, you say that, about 14,000 Munster fans made their way over. You know, there is issues there because, you know, imagine that many people in the London Stadium. People have said, oh, more people would have gone had it been at the London Stadium or at Twickenham. No, it wouldn't. And it would have looked even worse in a much bigger stadium. So it is something that European rugby are going to have to look at.
What can they do?
It's a hard one, isn't it? You look at the two Challenge Cup semi-finals played at home grounds. They were ram-packed. And guess what? Both home teams won. The same thing happened in the semi-finals of the Champions Cup. Both home teams, in inverted commas, won. You know, do you then look at it and go, well, you can have it at a home ground because of your seeding, but you have to split the revenue? You know, they've picked Coventry because it's a suitably sized stadium, the Ricoh Arena, with 33,000 as a capacity. You know, I think they got to about 16,000 in the end. It didn't look great. You put it in a 16,000 seat stadium, which, you know, name me some of those. Do you play it at Quinns? Would Saracens want to play at Quinns? I don't know. Would Quinns want the game there? I don't know. And this is the thing, when European rugby are looking at it and going, if Team X from England qualifies for a home semi-final, home country advantage semi-final, we need some stadia that we can look at that fit all the criteria that are available, first and foremost, and aren't ridiculously big. So it's a tough one, really. It didn't look good, though, whereas the difference the next day, playing at the Aviva Stadium, Leinster are playing in their hometown. You know, they fill the Aviva Stadium or get near to filling it when they play some of their big European group games there. So it's not something that's foreign to their fans. A number of things to look at. I don't know what the right answer is, to be honest.
It's one of them where if you're talking about Saracens, one thing they are lacking is that loyal fan base. And there's a number of reasons for that. Demographic of where they play the games. In North London, you've obviously got Arsenal, who are a big pull for the majority of that area.
And Tottenham.
And Tottenham, okay. Well, Arsene Wenger, until I die. No, it's not. Ian Wright. There you go. That's the reason why. But it's, you know, that's one thing that I think is going to be the next phase for them as growth as a team. The product's out there. They're one of the best teams in the world, aren't they? Club teams in the world. They've got the best players. Yeah, I think that was for me. I watched the game and it was, you know, you compare it to the game the next day, which the intensity of the crowd, and you could hear it coming through the TV. I think that adds to the fan experience, doesn't it? I mean, it wasn't, you know, the game didn't match up to probably the fan experience that was there in Cov.
Mainly because the majority of the fans were Munster fans, but on the pitch, Saracens was so dominant. Yeah, even the first box kick from Ben Spencer, I mean, how well did he play? Jackson Ray again was phenomenal. But every facet of the game, they dominated.
What did you guys make of Billy Vunipola's performance, his man of the match performance, and also his interview after the game? I mean, should he have taken that time to maybe address a few issues that had gone on the previous week?
Oh, here we go. So we're carrying on the discussions, Andy Rowe.
Well, I think we have to be fair. Mm.
No, we do. No, definitely. I think it's one of them where you could have picked a number of players to be man of the match. But if you're looking at it, Billy probably was, in my opinion, Saracen's best player in terms of the way that he
plays.
Impacts, the carries, you know, the stats said it as well. When Austin called him as man of the match, my initial thing was, ooh. So there must, it's already in, you know, subconsciously, I was thinking, although that Billy probably is man of the match, don't give it to him because there's
good, though?
Because then we're opening up more controversy. That was my initial thing.
Yeah.
If it was me, if I was Austin, I probably wouldn't have given him man of the match because I'm probably a bit soft. Austin don't give a shit, does he?
No.
And he has called it how he's seen it. It's probably similar to what Goody would have probably given him man of the match.
If you sat there judging him on just as his rugby performance, which in reality, as a commentator, when you are given man of the match, that's what you got to do. No baggage that comes with it. No, you know, previous performances, previous tweets, previous anything, Instagram posts, whatever. Judge him on that 80 minutes. He was phenomenal for Saracens.
Yeah,
whether you like him or not in the current climate of what he's created. And he has created it himself. There's no one else except himself that's created this storm around him. Judge him as a rugby player. He played bloody well. And like you said, Jim, there's a number of other players that could have got man of the match, but he probably did. You know, the try that sealed it on the line that he ran, you know, Austin's given him man of the match. The disappointing thing for me was then Billy, and people have said, Joe Marler said it on the podcast last week, didn't perhaps articulate or maybe we're thinking that he didn't articulate what he should have done in making an apology. All he said was, I believe in what I believe in. You know, I'm all about love or something like that. But what he should have said, I'm sorry
for pissing people off.
For offending anyone that I've offended. These are my Christian beliefs that I live by. And I shouldn't have liked, I shouldn't have tried to justify Israel Folau's position on it. And, you know, then people would perhaps have understood Billy's position a bit more. But he didn't.
But that's where
he hasn't taken the Instagram post down.
But that's where that now that you're asking me whether they should have given him man of the match. In hindsight, I'm saying no, they shouldn't because of his interview.
Yeah,
was he man of the match? Yes, he was. He was the best player on the pitch. Just so Austin's right in doing that. Has Austin then said, right, I love Billy in terms of how he plays? He might have been a little bit immature. We're going to give him a platform now. Whether to raise the viewings of the content that will come from the interview, for clickbait for BT Sport, whatever, this could be the turning point for Billy Vunipola in what's gone past in a crazy week of rugby, right? And then he goes and does the interview and gives us nothing.
Yeah,
that's where I would have been like, in hindsight, I probably wouldn't give Billy man of the match. That's what I'm trying to say.
Looking back at it, I think, you know, you said it earlier about Austin. You know, I don't think Austin would be told, consider Billy for man of the match because we can get this platform.
No, 100%.
I don't think Austin would just be like, no chance. I'm giving man of the match to who I want to give man of the match to. And he wouldn't have had an agenda, Austin. And he wouldn't have been, knowing the boys at BT Sport, I very much doubt that was pushed upon Austin or whether Austin was asked to do that.
Well, there was a question that came in from Gareth Gow. He wants to know if BT's coverage pushed a pro-Billy V agenda regarding the social media comments.
No.
Seemed to suggest he'd had a tough week, thus painting him as a victim to some.
He's not a victim. He's created this storm himself. That's the bottom line of it.
He's still had a tough week, though.
But it's self-inflicted
tough
week.
Yes, of course.
And you know, don't get me wrong, Billy's had a tough week, but not because things have transpired against him or things have happened. You know, you think about the people affected by what him and Israel Folau said and he's followed up with. You don't know the impacts that's had on mental health of people that are struggling to deal with their sexuality or coming out as gay or lesbian or whatever. So for me, I've got no sympathy for Billy in terms of people see, oh, he's had a tough week, because it's all self-inflicted. But I don't think there's anything from BT Sport to say that. Lawrence Delaney's hammered him on Talk Sport this morning as well, saying, you know, he had the platform to apologise. I don't understand why he hasn't done that. And when you've got someone like Lawrence, who is such an influential figure in rugby, had a stellar career, World Cup winner, playing in the same position as Billy, saying that, you'd hope Billy would have a look at it.
I think deep down, knowing Billy, and I might be completely wrong, I think he is sorry deep down. I think he's a little bit immature in terms of the way that he's gone about it, because he doesn't live his life like a Christian, does he? Like, he said a devout Christian. Like all these things. I don't want to keep labouring the point. Like, I know, because a lot of was spoken about last week. But, you know, I think for Billy, it's probably gone now. But I think that he could have won over a few more people to be like, right, he's made a mistake, he's fucked up, and he didn't do that. Instead, he got a bloke claiming to be Munster, but I'm sure he was from Culverin on in a pair of brown slippers trying to fill him in.
And then he said he was scared.
Well, you'd be freaked out, wouldn't you, if someone runs on the pitch wearing a pair of slippers, wouldn't you? Be like, this guy must be an absolute nutter.
What do you guys make of Jerome Gassier's performance?
You're not offside, I don't know. Play on.
I think he was better. I can't think of anything that stands out apart from that the scrum where I think Conor Murray's kicked it. Obviously, people are talking about
O'Donoghue
on the flank. I don't know. Maybe that's one.
The way the game's refereed now, the breakdown in that game line battle, it wins games, doesn't it? Whether you like it or not, how quick the ball comes out, how organised the fences are, it's all about the break. He gets a breakdown, he just looks at it with his hands on his hips, doesn't say anything to the players. So the players are like, I don't know what to do, so we'll just do anything. And you get away with stuff, and then he just blows his whistle. It's one of them.
That's where he is one of the worst, is at the breakdown. We had this chat with Wayne Barnes, I think, and he said, as a referee, you don't need to give directives at the breakdown. Like that, I think that's what he said. Even though he does, and Nigel Owens does, it's not for the referee to say you can and can't do this.
Yeah.
Like, you are. It almost feels like we are stereotyping. Yes, we are. But I'm telling you now, hands down, having been refereed by French referees, it's awful. It really is.
He's told us, hands down.
It is, hands down.
Well, we're going to talk about the other semi-final now, and we've got Leinster hooker James Tracy on the phone. James, thank you very much for joining us.
Hello, thanks for having me on again.
First and foremost, you win a semi-final. How's the hangover today?
Yeah, yesterday was a bit worse. I think they're one of the biggest, kind of most dynamic packs you're going to play against. And then a few beers after probably didn't help the cause. But yeah, we've a few beaten up bodies today. But, you know, glad to get the win.
Mate, definitely. It looked like a physical game, looked like a class one to play in. So for you, you came on for the injured Cronin. What's quite interesting, and again, I know this because I've been a substitute many a time. I didn't know if you know that, but I was. No warm-up, mate. So Cronin goes down. You're literally stripped off, ready to go. Were you warm at all, or did you just think, forget it, I'm straight out there?
Yeah, one of those ones where you didn't get too much time to think about it, so it's probably better off that I just got thrown in there. But here, Jim, what's this about you backing against us? I thought you were a Leinster man. You told me last year.
Yeah, mate, disgusting,
you were
Jim.
One of us.
We've not even spoke about it. I absolutely apologise.
What are you thinking, Jim? It was a thoroughly dominant performance, wasn't it, mate? And you look back at the game, obviously Sexton back in the team. How good was it to have him back as your 10, sort of leading the ship until he went off, emptied the tank, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he's one of the best players in the world, and you know, he's just a big game player, and you know, World Player of the Year, and it's good to see him back in flying form, and almost got an unbelievable drop goal as well to boost. But yeah, no, I think anyone would love to have him in their team, and it was a good one of the weekend.
And what was it like in the build up? Because again, as you mentioned there, I actually thought the way that Toulouse had played in the build-up that they were potentially the favourites, but the way that you guys played at the weekend obviously shows how little I know. But how was the build-up for you? Because it's not been as probably good on the field as it was last year, but I mean, that win at the weekend just kind of cements your place now as potential favourites, some might say.
Yeah, we've had a few disappointing results in the Pro 14. Well, I think to keep Toulouse tryless, now just about tryless, but to keep down trialists is something we can take huge confidence from. You know, the amount of scout and video work you do, and they just have such exciting players, you know, like Colby and Houdet and DuPont, and they've obviously a huge pack as well, so there's a lot to deal with. I think we take a lot of confidence from clinging on and dealing with that. But yeah, the week was incredibly exciting and nerve-wracking all the same, because you know, I think the Toulouse of old have really come back, and you know, there's no real kind of set play to what they do, so it's kind of expect the unexpected with them. So we're glad to come out on the right side of it.
And just looking back at team selection and stuff like that, were you surprised to see DuPont at 10 and Untermack on the bench? Would you have preferred that, I suppose, or would you, were you expecting DuPont to play at 9 and Untermack at 10, which perhaps could have been more threatening to you, against you guys?
Yeah, you know, as you guys know, he hasn't started that many games. I think it was like his fourth start there. He's moved there a good bit during games, but he didn't have too many starts. But they're just trying to get their best players on the field, and you know, it's unexpected. It's UA with them, and they just try and make some sort of inroads in around the ruck, and off they go. So yeah, we kind of prepared for both, but yeah, that's what they went with.
And then talking about team selection, we mentioned Cronin went off. I mean, we don't know how bad his injury is. Is it going to be one of them where basically you're going to have to do every single training session to the lead up to the team, and then they're going to throw him in there like George Cruz did to me in 2016 when he went to Dubai the week before and I trained and played in the game and then got 2 minutes in the final? How bad is Cronin?
you're not too bitter about that one. I pretty much do all the reps anyway. He has that one well sewn up. I know he's I don't think it's too bad. He probably won't play this week, but I think they're pretty hopeful, so we'll see. But he's like, I'm like the car horse, like you, Jim, and get flogged every week.
The warrior, mate.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. And obviously looking at this weekend's game, Ulster away, are you sending the Shags over there, or is it full bore?
Oh well, I think they're gonna want to scalp with us, so I think we just reviewed it there and flipped the page to them. It's a pretty big game for both of us. We want to get a bit of momentum going in into the final now. So I'd say we'll be going full bore.
And you mentioned the final there. I think everyone will agree, including myself, that the two best teams...
Even though you backed Toulouse.
Yeah, I know. I should never have...
By 10.
Mate, hey,
what a clown.
Thank you for reading. Thank you for reading the stuff. But what in this Saracens game, if there's any, is there any flaws at all that you can pick up? Is it like, I know in the quarterfinal last year it was a comfortable victory, but I think the way that Saracens played at the weekend, it's going to be a proper battle. Is there anything that you've picked up in this Saracens team that fills you with confidence? Or is it just going to be down to the day and the small margins and all that?
Yeah, I think what you finished up on there, I watched the Munster game, obviously, and they were just so impressive and how they controlled and managed the big moments and just squeezed the life out of Munster, really. And, you know, they're very in attack and big ball carriers. I think it's going to be an unbelievable game, unbelievably tough, and we're going to have to be at our very best if we want to win.
And if you do win... If you do, and I'm not saying anyone back in, I'll just see how the next week unfolds. Party at Johnny Sexton's house, is we invited, as we are big followers, and basically we've got Devon Toner back out there by having him on the live show. Are we going to do some wine tasting with Johnny or not? Are you inviting us? If you win.
I'll put in a word for you, see what we can do.
Mate, he doesn't want me to come and empty his wine collection out. I've heard he's got a load of cash down there as well, so... I don't think we're invited, Jim, after you back to lose.
Oh, damn.
I'm back in Leinster for the final. I've said it here first. Go on, Leinster.
James, thank you very much for joining us. Best of luck this weekend and for the final against Saracens. I know Big Jim will have his Leinster jersey on and watching with a pint of Guinness in hand as well.
Good man. Cheers, boys.
Cheers for that, mate. Well done, buddy.
Good lad.
Good lad.
Good man.
Knew they'd win.
What a clown you are, eh, Jim?
Knew they'd win.
10 points.
Mate, I don't know what I was thinking.
He didn't think.
When I said that, Sexton, I didn't know whether he was going to play. I thought Toulouse would have put Intermac at 10. And
James Lowe, how good was he? Mate, that selection.
Mate, exactly. Like Leinster pulled out, again, like Saracens did, a performance that we've not seen all season, which is great for the Champions Cup, because now we're going to see Saracens Leinster, which a lot of people predicted at the start of the season, which it would be, and it's going to be an absolute belter. But Toulouse went there to lose. Clearly, see what I've done there.
Yeah, I see what you've done.
What do you guys make of the approach? At times, it seemed a little...
French.
Yeah, I mean, watching the game, again, you go back to what we said about the Saracens-Munster game. A similar sort of way, Toulouse weren't allowed to play the way they've been playing. And that's a testament to Leinster and how good they were in defence, the pressure game they put on, the work rate of some of their boys, their kick chase. A lot of the unseen things that don't require skill just require a huge amount of effort. Devon Toner chasing kicks down like Jim Hamilton's never done in his life. Toulouse weren't allowed to play the way they have been playing, and they've been on a phenomenal run of games. I think they've lost something like two or three games in their last 24 games or something this season. You know, they were the form team in France, without a shadow of a doubt. They won the quarterfinal away at a French. Would they have won a quarterfinal away at any other team apart from a French team? I don't know. But, you know, credit to Leinster. They got their selection wrong, Toulouse. Should never have played Bezzy at 9, should have played Dupont at 9, Antemac at 10.
Things changed for them when they made that change, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And it's easy saying that afterwards when they've got nothing to lose. You know what I've done there, Jim?
No, I don't. No,
when they made
the
change.
I don't get it.
Because they are, you know, the game, it wasn't gone, but they were, once Leinster get a 10, a 12-point lead or whatever it was at home in a semi-final, they ain't ever given that up. But, yes, they did improve when Antemac came on. And it goes to show that he should have trusted him and let him go out there and start the game instead of moving Dupont out of position. But the French do what the French do. Ugo Moller used to coach me at Brief. I didn't even have a clue about selection. He tried to pick me at fullback once. What a crazy man.
Tight-head.
Crazy
but
man.
It's like Ramos taking the kickoffs. What about some of them? He's literally booting them out the back of the dead ball area. Like that stuff like that, which you don't see Leinster do, you don't see Saracens do, them things which don't seem like much like at the time, but they're such big moments. Like a scrum on halfway, that's a big shift in momentum.
Yeah,
I don't know. I didn't think Toulouse played as well as they had done either in recent games, but Leinster was so good. How good's James Lowe? You mentioned it there.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
Bloody good.
But then you look at Toulouse, and let's not forget, this is their first year back in the knockout stages. You know, it's their first year where they've pushed a lot of these younger players through. They've got rid of a lot of the old guard. So, you know, they've been poor in Europe for the last few years. You know, let's not go too hard on them, because to make a semi-final from where they've come from over the last couple of years is some effort. And they'll only get better for that experience. But Leinster are way further down the track in terms of European big game experience. And you saw that. And you saw it in the Saracens game as well. You know, that experience of the top two teams, knowing how to win games and having that power game, relentless ability to work hard, you know, absolutely empty the tank for 80 minutes and then bring an amazing bench on. That's why they're the best two teams. And, you know, I predicted it earlier in the season that they'd be in the final, and they are.
Fair play. Johnny Sexton as well. And Goody's bagged him loads this season.
What?
He just absolutely ripped into it. I mean, I'm a big Irish fan. But, you know, it just shows, doesn't it? The cream always rises to the top.
Was that the best performance that he's had since he's been named at World Player of the Year?
I think there's been some issues there in terms of injuries.
He's definitely been injured.
And, you know, the knock-on effect is that he tries too hard, and then he gets frustrated. He was frustrated with the way Ireland were playing because they, you know, although people haven't said it, they were still shocked by that England game that, you know, ripped them to pieces. And the knock-on effect of that, he's had a couple of weeks out injured. He's back in his hometown, his blue shirt, playing for Leinster in a semi-final, which he's done time after time after time. And he bossed the game. And
tried to drop goal from the halfway line.
Yeah.
That's when you know that someone is backing themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll have a look at the Challenge Cup semi-finals. Well, Toulouse may have come up a bit short, but it's going to be an all-French final in the Challenge Cup next month. Quins and Sale, they put up good fights, but what do you guys make of the performances from both sides?
Well, I followed it on social.
Yes.
Judy, you opening up Sinclair. Talk to me. Was that a talking point in the match?
Mate.
My old blowbags?
Carl Sinclair, the gift that keeps on giving to opposition. But he's basically the new Jim Hamilton.
Oh, what do you mean?
You can guarantee he's going to give
powerhouse
some dumb penalties away. No, I mean, to be fair, so Clermont were very dominant in the first half.
Clermont go full noise?
Yeah, full noise.
Greg Laidlaw playing?
Stadium was packed. No, he was on the bench. That's why they were full noise.
Oh, here he is.
Morgan Parra started. Yeah, I mean, Harlequins were a little bit shell-shocked and Clermont came out in full noise. They were very good, accurate. Penno's ridiculous. You know, they had a lot of their power game players on the front foot. And that yellow machine was at home. It's a very tough nut to crack at home, isn't it?
It's an amazing place to play.
Yeah. But then credit to Harlequins. And again, it's a little bit of Clermont doing what Clermont do. They get into a lead. It's a knockout game. And then all of a sudden, the shit hits the fan. The other team gets a bit of momentum. Quinn score a couple of tries, close it up to a 10-point game with about 10 or 12 minutes to go, and then enter Carl Sinclair losing his head again.
Come on, talk to me then. So basically, yeah, Carl Sinclair's lost in the game. I haven't seen the game.
So the first thing that happens...
What's he done?
The first thing that happens... So Elliot, so good they named him twice.
The elephant man.
The Quinn's hooker makes a tackle on... It might have been Tuathuva or something. And it was an all right hit. It wasn't like a big smoking, I've ended this kid. And then you've got Carl Sinclair going, wow! Right next to him, right? I've never heard a noise like it on a rugby field.
Well, maybe he's just good in his pants.
But it did sound like that, to be fair. And anyway, John Lacey's the ref, and he's turned around to him. He's like, do not scream and shout like that.
Do not scream or shout like that.
When someone makes a tackle or whatever. The next play goes on. About 30 seconds later, a line out's there, and obviously Carl Sinclair's head's gone here. And he sees
why is his head gone?
I don't know, because he's Carl Sinclair. Like, so Quinn's got the ball in the driving maul. He basically ragdolls the life out of Arthur Atoria, who's exiting the mall, and flings him round, slams him on the floor, as if he's the hardest bloke in the world.
I could definitely do that.
Straight in front of the referee. The ref's like, what are you doing? Penalty against you. And Quinn's had all the momentum. You know, at this point, Clermont will probably question themselves, going, mate, boys, what's going on? Classic Clermont.
Who's this psychopath?
We're going to check it away. And Carl Sinclair lost it. Next thing, Paul Gustard hooks him straight off. The bloke, you know, he's lost his head. And I go back to Warren Gatland calling him, and I quote, an emotional time bomb. And then Carl Sinclair coming out and going, I'm always in control. I mean, have a look at your clips from the last couple of months, Carl. You know, you're slapping people on the chest, yellow card. Quins lose the game. Paul Gustard said their discipline was poor. Integral part
of that.
Did
he not call him out? No, like you are now.
Integral part of that.
Carl Sinclair. Did he act him?
England, Wales, loses his discipline. Had an amazing 40 minutes. Loses his discipline, loses his head. Gives a couple of penalties away. Momentum shift, gets substituted. England lose. I mean, Brian O'Driscoll and Sam Warburton said it in the studio after the game that it is now becoming a behaviour. So it ain't just me saying it. It ain't just me going at Carl Sinclair going, what are you doing, mate?
What does Joe Marler think about it all? He's in the studio. He's mates with him. He's one bind away from him in the scrum.
Well, he said he's hard last week because one of the questions was who'd win the fight out of Ellis Genge and Carl Sinclair.
Genge would kill him.
That's what I said.
Genge would kill him, mate.
That's what I said. But Joe said, oh, because he's my Quinn's teammate, I'll say Carl Sinclair. But I don't know, mate. Paul Gustard isn't ever going to be happy with what Carl Sinclair does time after time on a rugby field. And that's why I tweeted, how good would he be if he just wound his neck in and didn't lose his head?
He hasn't got a neck.
Sorry.
He ain't got a neck, mate.
You're horrible. You know, how good's Mako Vunipola as a prop? I don't know, loose head, tight head, different number, but ultimately you've got a ball-carrying prop here who is good with his hands, both of them are, aggressive with ball in hand or in defence. Does Mako Vunipola do any of this? No. You can't be this enforcer guy anymore. The only way to enforce it is carry big, tackle big, or smash into rocks.
But mate, I don't know. Like, you're asking someone who was similar to that, basically just an ill-disciplined idiot on the pitch. But I could ask the same question. Like, you know, when do you stop eating?
I don't. I'm not judged by, you know, my career doesn't depend on how much I do eat or don't eat.
No, your life does.
Pod.
Rugby pod.
If you're enjoying the pod and are interested in helping us out and getting access to even more great rugby content, don't forget to check out our Superfan subscription service. Here's a clip of one of our latest features to give you a taste of what's on offer. Hello and welcome along to the latest episode of the Rugby Pod Sessions, and I'm joined today by Wasp Sly Half and a man who's played 16 times for the All Blacks. It seems more than that. See, yeah. I thought you played more than that.
Yeah, I think officially 16 tests, but there's a lot of tests there where I watch from the stands and ate lollies and instead of actually playing. But yeah, it was cool. It was an awesome time of my life.
And now it's Lima Sopawanga, if you hadn't already guessed. You're over here, you're playing for Wasps. Was there a light bulb moment where you're like, fuck this, I'm going. I'm signing. I'm going overseas.
Yeah, I think it came when I had a conversation with my good mate, Michael Hobbs, who's Jock Hobbs' son, and he's a great mate of mine.
He's doing great things, isn't he?
Yeah, he's doing great things. He ended up raising a whole bunch of funds with one of his really good NFL mates. I think it was Kenny Vaccaro, and they built a school in Kenya. I think he raised like something like $750,000 to build this school. It's called Blessed Hope Project. So if you want to have a look and support that at
Blessed
any time.
Hope,
yeah, Blessed Hope Project. Yeah, get behind them. A pretty awesome cause. I know I sponsor two kids, a boy and a girl, and that just helps them get through through college.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it probably came when he kind of said to me, what would hurt you more if someone was to take away this contract or someone was to take away your All Black jersey. And for me, that had already happened in 2015 when I missed out on the World Cup. That it, you know, I had already missed out on a World Cup once, and so I'd already gone through that, and I didn't really want to go through that again, whether that was through injury or form or just coaches just going another way. Mm. And so obviously the World Cup was coming up this year, and I had full faith in myself that I could make that team, but you know, I couldn't really control, you know, whether I got injured and did my, you know, ACL, or whether the, you know, whether if I was in the form of my life, and the coaches were just like, look, we're just going for, you know, Damian McKenzie or Richie because they want a bit more versatility or things like that. And so that's really what it came down to, and that's how I kind of, that was my, I reckon, my light bulb moment.
And you can listen to the full episode of that along with loads of other great content, all for less than the price of a pint a month. So head over to patreon.com/therugbypod to check it out.
Pod.
Rugby pod.
Don't forget, you can catch all the season's Premiership, Pro 14 and Champions Cup action on rugbypass.com if you're in Asia. And wherever you are in the world, you can watch the video version of this pod on there as well. Shall we have a look at the weekend's games? What's coming up? We've got Newcastle versus Northampton.
Premiership Ruggers back.
It is.
Last Chance Saloon.
Newcastle are down now.
You reckon?
Unfortunately, who do you reckon then?
I think Newcastle will go down, but you know, if they beat Northampton this weekend at home on a Friday night, Northampton, I hear, have got a few injuries. Are they 7 points behind Worcester now, I think? And then they go to Gloucester away, then they play Bristol at home. So, you know, they're pretty much down if they don't win this weekend. And the relegation race will stay alive if they do. And I think they might sneak it. I'm going to back Newcastle to beat Northampton this weekend.
Oh, I don't know. I think if you look at it, I don't want to make the bad decision again like I did at the weekend and back to lose to beat Leinster. Ridiculous decision. Northampton out of the top four now. Guaranteed top six.
Not guaranteed at all. They need to win. Northampton need to win.
So I'm going Northampton. I look at Newcastle in that game against Leicester where that for them was, for me, the defining point of their season to not get relegated and to send Leicester down with the history of the players.
Leicester weren't getting relegated if they lost that game.
I think they will. I think they were. I'm going to say Northampton. I think Northampton will beat them.
And Exeter versus Quins, and Quins could slip out of the top four if they go down.
Yes, please.
Hold on, you said you wanted them to be in the top four last
week. Yeah, that's because Joe was in the studio last week. Okay. I wanted to feel comfortable. I know he gets really uncomfortable when I call in and he's there and he's in my seat.
He was all right, to be honest.
He was texting as I was chatting. He did not have any interest in what I had to say. Exeter, Quins. Exeter going to win, especially having got beaten by Wasps the week before, well, 2 weeks before. They've had a week off to refresh momentum going into the playoffs. Exeter will beat them.
The only thing that Quins have got going in their favour now is that they did come back, and their second half comeback against Claremont was very good. Imagine had they got absolutely hosed, which at some point they were staring down the barrel, Quins, of getting hosed by Claremont. They didn't. They've got a bit of momentum and belief, scoring three tries in that second half.
But tough for them. Tough for them to fly back and try and build themselves up.
Backing it up, where Exeter have had a week off. Exeter coming off the back of, like you said, losing to Wasps at home. That was their kick at the backside they needed. Very similar to, you look at Saracens, they had a kick at the backside, sending the Shags down to Bristol and losing the week before, and then you get a better performance the week after. So I can only see an Exeter victory there.
Looking at your Wasps, Goody, going up against Saracens, who are coming off the high of Champions Cup football.
Football?
Footy.
Do you think Wasps have got a chance here to get into the top four with the win, or?
Hell yes. Yes, I do.
So it's a week in the Prem now, and then it's the final, right?
Nope.
It's just two weeks.
Two back-to-backs.
2 weeks.
It's really, I mean, I think Dai Young's done a piece in, I think it might have been the Coventry Evening Telegraph. He wants Saracens to bring their best team.
Oh, and all right, Dai.
I think by saying
putting the same performance as you did against.
Because we want to beat the best. I'm like that. If I'm a horse player, I'm like, I saw Lima Sopawanga tweet. He's like, Billy, take next week off, Shag. Well played.
Mate.
But I'm thinking, as a Wasps fan, as a Wasps ambassador, I want to see the Shags come up. Mate, I want to see the likes of Jim Hamilton when he was playing. It's very similar to
Kelly Brown.
It's very similar to, actually, your last game of Ruggers, wasn't it?
My last start, not my last game. My last game was the Champions Cup final up in Edinburgh. That was my last game.
Oh, yeah. Well, 2 minutes, but.
Doesn't matter.
It all depends what team Sarri send up, because if they, you know, they've got Exeter next week as well, haven't they, at home? You know, they either go hard again this week and rest a few for the Exeter game.
That's what they'll do.
I think they'll go rest a few for this week and go hard against Exeter at home, purely because of what might come further down the line of beating Exeter in a final potentially. So they may go 50-50. If Wasps win it, we could be looking at fourth place by the end of the weekend.
I think Sarri's all win.
And then you go down, all the way down the table to Bath versus Sale, where either team could really also make the semi-finals. Do either of them, how do you see that game panning out?
Well, it's all about the top six for them, isn't it? I mean, I've been impressed with Sale, been impressed with Bath for large parts. Bath, really, with the squad that they've got, should be winning more games or not.
So it's interesting, the Bath thing. Obviously, Bath and Sale could make the top four, but it's interesting times for Bath, because, you know, there was this plan that they announced earlier in the season that Stuart Hooper was going to take over from Todd Blackadder in 2 years' time. Todd Blackadder was going to see out next year as well. New coaches weren't going to come in. Now all of a sudden they've allowed Todd Blackadder to leave. Imagine coaching at Bath. You just never know what's going on there.
No.
Like Priestland, you're gone, mate. No contract. A few weeks later, Priestland, here's a contract.
Here's a Hoover, mate.
You know what I mean? And, you know, to announce Todd Blackadder's leaving now and he's going to Japan, you know, are they going to put someone in charge with no experience in Stuart Hooper as a director of rugby? That's a massive shout. Gervin Dempsey is talking about him becoming head coach. Yeah, as a player now, you're like, who's leading here? Am I listening to Hoops? Am I, you know, listening to Todd Black? Well, you're leaving, Todd. So, you know, and it can go that way, can't it? And sail away on a Friday night, you know, after Sale had a close run thing and performed really well out in La Rochelle. Yeah, I think, you know, I'm back in Sale there. And Sale could nudge themselves towards top four as well. Steve Diamond's just talking about making top six, but the battle is intriguing. Top four, top six, the lot.
And will it be Benetton, Edinburgh or Scarlett to secure the final place up for grabs in the Guinness Pro 14 playoffs this weekend?
Imagine hashtag always Edinburgh, the season they've had, and they don't make Champions Cup rugby next season. I'd love to see Benetton Treviso make it. Obviously, I'd like to see Edinburgh as well. They've got Glasgow at the weekend. It's a weird format. First and foremost, to the hundreds of thousands of listeners out there, I'm not going to try and dissect it with an open cloth, but...
Why don't you do it with a closed cloth?
Because a closed cloth will be basically me just saying that it's a tough...
Or what about a dirty cloth that you've had a courtesy wipe with?
God, especially after a flight. Have you ever been for a shit on a flight?
Oh, no, Jim.
Man, I can barely sit down. I've literally got one foot in the sink and the other foot on the toilet roll holder, mate. It's not a great sight. Anyway.
I'm going to back Benetton.
Really?
You back them or you want them?
Both. I think both, because they've stepped up hugely this year in terms of performances.
You're welcome.
And is it something to do with the fact that they've not been in the Champions Cup? So in the Pro 14, you know, they've had some big scalps this year, haven't they?
Well, I was over there, and that's why for me, look at you, yeah, yes, it was.
It was you, Jim.
Yes, it was. I trained with them. I trained
very
with them.
Similar to when you did the voiceover for the Dragons. They didn't win a game for 4 years, but you did go over there, and they've improved. So well done, you.
They have. And Marco Bortolami got me training with the guys. Lovely bunch there. Coaches, Kieran Crowley, head coach. Marius Goosen, who's running the defence there. Good blokes. And for me, Edinburgh shouldn't be in the position that they're in with how well they've played this season. I'd love to see. I'm putting my neck on the line.
Hashtag always Benetton.
Mate, hashtag always Benetton. Oh, get me out Jim, there for you a turncoat. Holiday.
I think they're playing Zebra away this weekend. And if they win that game with a bonus point, they qualify. But people have complained before about the Champions Cup, where an Italian team just gets a place in it, and it sort of skew-ifs one of the groups because they've been used to getting hammer-ins. But Benetton have upped their game. Conor O'Shea, we've spoken about him on here before, has implemented certain things within Italian rugby. The coaching staff at Benetton that Jim went over to see have done a great job underneath that as well. And, you know, I actually hope that they qualify on merit, because then people can't have a complaint, and they've improved no end this season. So come on, Benetton.
And now Conor's gone. Conor O'Shea's gone.
Has he?
Oh, has it not? Okay. Well, you put that as a rumour.
Talked about it last week, didn't we?
Oh, did you? Okay.
Don't worry about it.
It's just a rumour, mate. I don't know. I'm not worried about it.
Oh, carry on.
Talking rumours. Your Bastero, he's gone to New York. Why has he done that? Do you want to talk about him, Gurdy, or not?
No comment. I mean, imagine the sweat, Matthew Bastero in New York.
Oh, God, your Bastero.
Warren Gatland is going to be confirmed as the Lions coach again. Maybe open the door to him being the England coach as well. He's just going to say how much, that's all it is. You know, he could name his price for literally any rugby job in the world right now, I reckon, Warren Gatland. It's interesting though, isn't it? You know, you look at where does he want to go? Does he just want to take the Lions job in 2 years? The success that he's had, does he want the All Blacks job? People are saying he's a Kiwi, he definitely wants that job. Do the Kiwis want him? Normally they try and promote someone through their system in terms of someone that's coaching at Super Rugby level. Scott Robertson's been touted as that job. England, you know, we're trying to get rid of Eddie Jones post-World Cup. Unless we win it, I'd have Gatland tomorrow as the England coach.
I think if Gatland becomes England coach, they win the World Cup. Not obviously this year, because they ain't going to get him this year. If they can keep him 4 years, I think they win the World Cup under Gatland. I think he's that good.
Any other rumours floating around?
Well, the rumour of Sean Edwards, that he was the guy that I mentioned a few weeks ago, big news about Wasps. I heard that Sean Edwards was seen in Kof Kebabish eating a kebab, telling everyone he signed.
Was he in his Welsh tracksuit? Because Joe Marler was on here last week saying that he'd seen Sean Edwards in Chiswick having a pint in his full Welsh tracksuit on a non-international...
The full kit wanker. Mate, well, he's not a wanker, but that's what they call people they in do. Their full kit, Goody.
They do.
Any other rumours?
Ross Moriarty to Ospreys, potentially.
What? Mate, yeah, the Dragons thing ain't gone that well, has it?
No. I read somewhere that he played about 10 games for him this year.
Well, that's a lot, mate, compared to what Warmington used to play for Cardiff.
Yeah, true. But Ospreys obviously got some cash after Anscombe's move there as well. What else? Cruden potentially going back to New Zealand. Mm. Now McKenzie's injured. Can you see that happening?
Nah, that won't happen. I think the CEO's already come out and said that it's doubtful.
That means it's happening.
Why are you looking at New Zealand rugby, but you're not looking at any UK European rugby? What relevance has that got to do with your life now? This is your life, Andy Rowe.
I prefer watching Super Rugby.
Yeah, but this is your life.
What? Hold on a minute. Hold on.
It's like you don't watch... Like, if you like basketball, you don't watch like the British Basketball League. You watch the NBA.
I don't watch
it's like
any
me,
of
I don't watch. I don't watch the, well, no, you're comparing, the stuff over here. I watch the NBA, which is the Super Rugby.
The arrogant Kiwis. It's
a better version of rugby.
Super Rugby's horrific in terms of what it was. Super Rugby, that league now... Who knows who's playing who, when, where, how, who's in what league, who's winning. You can finish 15th in the conference and still call it. Oh, who knows what's going on there?
Any other rumours floating around?
Yeah, where's Ben Teo going, Jim? You said it off
France. There. I've heard he's going to France.
It's one of them, and if you sum up his impact at Worcester, and he's a very good player, Ben Teo, but...
I've heard amazing things about him, you know, in terms of his professionalism, genuinely. In terms of the way that he trains, rehab, diet, everything, and you look shocked.
Well,
I say that.
You say that. He's played about four games for him.
Yeah, that doesn't affect how...
You'd think he would be good at rehab after the amount of...
Andy Romite.
But you've got to look at clubs. We mentioned the Ross Moriarty thing. You know, value for money is what clubs are looking at now. You know, you don't just want a player there who is on a hell of a wage, and he is, and credit to him. You know, you only sign what's put in front of you, and at the time... Worcester thought, we'll offer him a boatload of cash, he'll play a load of rugby for us, and he'll be a very good player for us. He's a very good player, but Worcester fans haven't seen hardly any of them in a Worcester shirt.
It's difficult to do all. It's difficult to play well internationally and week in, week out for your club in a struggling team. It's not an easy thing to do.
Or just playing for your team.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do, I don't think, for certain players, especially in the centre, which is a tough collision-based position.
Any other rumours, or should we get into the good, the bad and the ugly?
Thomas Lavanini to Leicester. And the absolute unit, Nefi Leotigaga.
Lady Gaga.
Exactly him. 23 ston prop. I mean, imagine the sweat.
Where?
Everywhere. 23 ston. I mean, that's... He's two stone lighter than me, to be fair. But yeah, he's potentially going to Leicester as well. Absolute unit.
All right, well, let's finish things off with the good, the bad and the ugly with Andy Good.
Yeah, a few good bits or good bits this weekend. First and foremost, we'll go down to the Championship. London Irish back promoted into the Premiership after winning the Championship. They've been on a downward slide ever since Jim Hamilton signed his contract, went back on his word and didn't play for
them. I'm sorry.
They got relegated that year.
They've why is that good? Why is that good that they've been promoted? That's
because it's
like...
it's good to see them back in.
Right, all right.
It's good to see them back in the Premiership. It's a tough league, that Championship, Jim. I've won it once. What else is good? Denny Solomona's out the back. Flick to Ashy, your mate Jim, Chris Ashton to score for Sale was pretty classy. La Rochelle for reaching their first major final, brilliant performance by them. What else was good? Well, the only good places to go are the two top clubs in Europe, really. Leinster and Saracens back to their best. Johnny Sexton, especially for Leinster. Saracens dominant in every facet against Munster. So the good this week is shared for the first time ever between Saracens and Leinster.
Nice.
The bad, a couple of bad things. Let's start with Ugo Moller, my old coach, and his team selection for Toulouse, going against what they've been good at. No Untermac. Started Bezzy at 9, I'd have gone with DuPont at 9, and Untermac at 10. That probably cost them. What else was bad? Nathan Earle confirmed his ACL injury was pretty bad, so yeah. He's out for a good 9 months. That's pretty bad news. But the bad this week goes to Carl Sinclair.
Oh, mate.
The gift that keeps on giving opposition penalties. Lack of discipline. Gats called him the emotional time bomb. Carl Sinclair responded saying he's never out of control. Well, Quins were going towards the European finals. They were on the comeback trail. Momentum was with them. He gives dumb penalties away. Gets substituted. Carl Sinclair gets the bad. The ugly, only one ugly thing for me this week from the rugby world, and that's the Munster fan running on the pitch in his brogues or his boat shoes or whatever they were.
Slippers,
whatever they were, waving his finger at Billy Vanapola. What you're doing, whether you disagree what people have said, whether you dislike people, a fan should never, ever, ever enter onto the field unless invited and start threatening rugby players. So absolutely ridiculous from him.
He might have been from Cov, you know.
I reckon he was.
He might not have even been from Munster. He might have been a Covskin that's basically robbed that shirt off the street of someone. He wouldn't wear slippers. He wouldn't have been wearing slippers, no.
So the ugly this week goes to the Munster fan running on the pitch at the Rico.
Thanks, Goody. Thanks, Jim. Thank you very much for listening as well. Don't forget to subscribe, follow us on Twitter, review us on iTunes, and check out our Superfans monthly subscription service at patreon.com/therugbypod.
Rugby pod.
Pod.